At the heart of my garden stands the house where I live. I remember very well the day I saw it for the first time. Back then, I was looking for a house outside the city. I wandered through villages and hamlets. I poked around, knocked on doors. I questioned corner store owners and met secretaries of agricultural cooperatives. I chatted with fathers and mothers and shared secrets with sons and daughters. I had already seen quite a few possible dwellings, but this one I loved at first sight. A small, meager house, the kind that looks like what were once called Jewish agency houses. A modest lawn dying at the front, prickles and dry weeds tumbling around it, and a few ornamental bushes and fruit trees, some of which were about to die of thirst. The house stood on a slope. I went down and walked around it, and here was the surprise. An expansive, deep landscape that stretched out to the farthest western edges. It began with two plots of cultivated land with a few spears of cypresses at their margins, and above them two ranges of forested hills, dotted with dense, impressionistic smudges of variegated green, the pale green of the Tabor oak, the dark green of the Palestine oak, here and there the gleaming green of the Carob, and the green of the Terebinth, that of the slightly faded Land of Israel Terebinth, and the more vibrant Mastic. And above all this, veiled in the summer haziness of the valley, lay a familiar bluish range that extended from one end of the horizon to the other, the Carmel. Which valley? I don't want to insult anyone, but when I say the valley, I am referring to my very own Jezreel Valley. I turned around and looked back at the house. Because of the sloping nature of the plot, the rear of the house was supported by thin concrete pillars that created a space between the house and the ground below. Someone, I noticed, had built a small wire coop for chickens. I peeked in and saw four small carcasses bedecked in feathers, and they were all as dry as the tin water trough that stood beside them. When he left, that person had abandoned the chickens in their prison to die of hunger or thirst. But the house filled me with the happiness of a new love, and even this evil doing did not curtail it. I examined the plants and trees around it, an old pear tree, a dying lemon tree, a shady pecan tree, two oaks and three terebinths, chinaberry and jacaranda. A hardy prickly pear also grew there, and a crisp marijuana plant, remarkably green against the brown and yellow background. I wondered who might be coming to water it with such devotion. At the front of the house stood a fig tree, its fruit overripe, but when I drew closer to it, I saw tiny mounds of fresh sawdust, heralding disaster, piled up by the trunks. A closer look also revealed tunnel openings, dug by the fig tree borer, a harbinger of death that eats through the flesh of the trunk and eventually topples it. Everything I saw suggested the garden would need much work and forethought. But although I've always loved nature, I had precious little experience in gardening. I was an observer of my grandfather in Nahalal and my mother, his daughter, in Jerusalem. My grandfather was a professional planter who planted a vineyard, a grove, and an orchard on his farm. I loved watching him prune and trellis the grapes in his vineyard. The movements of his hands enchanted me. I was just a child and did not know how to express this in words, but I felt that the movements of a craftsman were the most beautiful movements ever to be embedded within the human body. To this day, I enjoy watching carpenters, locksmiths, farriers, stonecutters, bakers, more than watching athletes or ballet dancers. My grandfather grew up in a Hasidic family in the Ukraine, and when he was old enough to know his own mind, he underwent a religious conversion from the work of God to the work of the land. But my grandfather did not forget his Talmud. The first trees he planted in his yard were olives, pomegranates, and figs, all close to the vineyard. It was no coincidence that these were the fruit trees the Torah included in the seven species that the land of Israel was blessed with. Alongside the house, he planted orange and grapefruit, two more pomegranate trees, and one unbelievable tree that yielded oranges, lemons, tangerines, and other citrus fruits that I do not recall. Perhaps grapefruit, and perhaps, according to the story-like nature of my family, avocado or tomato. Either way, that tree aroused awe and excitement within me, and this only increased when I asked my mother how her father had managed to create it. "He's a magician," she said. Years later, I discovered it was a perfectly ordinary grafting of bitter orange understock, but my mother's words were already engraved upon me, and the impression has never dissipated.